Hello and welcome to another episode of the Natal Naturopath Podcast. Today I interview Laura Power. She is a vestibular physiotherapist and the founder of the Vertigo Co. She has worked within the field of neurological physiotherapy with a special interest in vestibular disorders such as dizziness, vertigo, and balance impairment since graduating in 2010. More recently, Laura has branched into the field of treatment of vestibular disorders in school-aged children and adolescents. She has 7 first author publications and 28 co-author publications in the field of vestibular research and an interest in progressive neurological conditions such as multiple sclerosis. She is so, so brilliant in this topic, and I am really excited to be picking her brain about the topic of vertigo, vestibular migraines, dizziness, and just migraines in general. Hope you enjoy. Hi, Laura, and welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for jumping on today. We're going to be talking all about vestibular dizziness, migraines, all of the things. So, to introduce you, can you tell our listeners what is a vestibular physiotherapist?
Yes. All right. I'll say thanks, Melanie, for having me. Vestibular physiotherapy is a very specialized area of physiotherapy, which treats patients from suffering from vertigo, dizziness, and impairments in their balance. So vertigo, for those that don't know, is a perception of the world spinning, rocking, swaying, or tilting, and is typically caused by an impairment in the vestibular system, so which is the balance organ in the inner ear. So it can be caused by conditions such as migraines, for example, which we'll talk about. And a vestibular physio treats these impairments by giving patients specific exercises to retrain their vestibular system, to reduce motion sensitivity over time, and to improve their patient's balance. So most vestibular rehab programs take between about 6 to 12 weeks. And in terms of how I came to specialise in the area, what we were sort of talking about, is my second rotation out of university was in outpatient rehabilitation at Bendigo Health, and that was in the vestibular falls and balance clinic, and I developed a deep passion for it, and I immediately knew that was what I wanted to do, and I've been doing that really ever since. So that was sort of how I came to become a vestibular physio.
Yeah. And, you know, before I came across you, I had never heard of a vestibular physiotherapist. And I suppose because I don't suffer from any issues there, you know, I hadn't looked into it a great deal. But so you studied physiotherapy and then gone on to specialize in that.
That's
particularly
correct. Yeah. So there's nothing really. So at uni, really, there's only sort of probably one or two lectures on vestibular physiotherapy. So you really have to go and do courses after uni. So I've done probably 4 or 5 courses after university now, so which take a week or so in addition to study, and they're kind of competency-based courses in vestibular physiotherapy to go on afterwards. They're postgraduate courses basically in vestibular physiotherapy.
It's a very niche area, so
very
but
niche,
thankfully yeah
right.
yes so We did touch on this a little bit, vestibular problems, but what is a vestibular migraine?
Yeah, so vestibular migraine is a variant of migraine where dizziness is the more prominent feature rather than headache. So it's probably equal to the most common cause of vertigo that we see, other than benign positional vertigo or BPPV, which we'll also talk about. So about 30% of vestibular migraine sufferers don't have headache at all. So you certainly can have headache associated with it. But a lot don't. So other common symptoms of this condition include, so you certainly can have headache associated with it, and that can be, so the classic migraine symptoms of a severe sort of one-sided throbbing headache, vertigo or dizziness, and that the dizziness can be the true spinning sensation, or it can be rocking, bobbing, swaying, tilting, floating, feeling like you're on a boat. Impaired balance, so feeling unsteady on your feet, nausea and vomiting, motion sensitivity, so when you move your head you feel dizzy, blurred vision or spots in the vision, so what we'd call a visual aura. Sensitivity to light, sensitivity to sound, perceived hearing loss, so not a true hearing loss where patients actually lose hearing, but a sense that their hearing might be dull.
Okay.
Ringing in the ears and a feeling of fullness or pressure in the ears. And often these patients feel quite anxious because vertigo can be quite anxiety provoking as well.
Oh my gosh. What a horrible, any of those sensations, it would feel so unsettling and you'd be feeling really worried, like what's going on? Is this going to pass? Especially the first time it happened.
Yeah. And these attacks with vestibular migraine as well. So often they can last minutes, hours, days, or they can actually be chronic when they can come on and actually not go away. So that can actually be the case too. Yeah.
Gosh. And so could you just go through if someone is going to develop vestibular migraines, does it occur at a certain age or after a certain life event, or, you know, what does the research show? How do these come about? Genetics, that sort of thing.
Yeah. This can happen at any age. So we see children with this. We see women with this. It's more common in women. Perimenopause, so hormones have a big influence in this. Hormonal fluctuations, so pregnancy, perimenopause and menopause have a massive influence on this, absolutely. So much more common in women than in men, but it can occur at any age, much more common in middle-aged women, but it can occur at any age. So we certainly see children with this as well. But middle-aged women is the much more common kind of age range that we would see. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And what would be the first sign that they're starting to – is it just an attack instantly of the vertigo if we're just focusing on vestibular migraines?
Yeah, it can present differently in different people. So some people might feel a vague sense of lightheadedness or motion sensitivity, or as other people might get a true sudden onset of spinning, like a real sudden vertigo attack. So it can present differently in different people. So they might feel just a sense of unsteadiness on their feet. Whereas other people might get a true sense of vertigo, nausea and vomiting, just presenting in that fashion, whereas some people might just feel a vague sense of unsteadiness. So it can present differently in different people. And that's why it's hard to really gauge for some people, you know, what is this? And it can be quite unsettling and anxiety provoking as to what's going on.
I've had clients myself where they're experiencing it and this dizziness, this vertigo, and really unsure of where to go first or who can help them. So what would you suggest to someone that is experiencing any of those symptoms? Where should they turn?
Absolutely. So I would suggest, in my opinion, personally, would be to go to a vestibular physiotherapist, probably because they have the most experience in vestibular migraines or vestibular disorders. But I'd probably be careful as to who you see. A lot of people in the vestibular world, say when you go, say, to Google, for example, if you just Googled vestibular physiotherapy, and you probably know this from a naturopath perception as well, if you just Google vestibular physiotherapy, there's a lot of people who advertise that they treat dizziness when really all they're really qualified to do is the Epley maneuver, for example, which is a treatment for benign positional vertigo.
Okay.
So when you're looking for someone to treat vestibular disorders such as vestibular migraine, you really need to look at their credentials. Okay. So you really need to look at have they done a credential-based course in vestibular physiotherapy, look into their background, that they've done, had years of experience and qualifications treating vestibular disorders, not just the first person that pops up on Google.
Yes. Okay. I hear you there.
Next probably would be a highly qualified neuro-otologist. So not a
neurologist. Oh, I've never heard of them. Okay.
So not a neurologist and not an ENT. So not an ear, nose and throat specialist.
Sure.
It's a neurologist that specializes in the ear. Okay. So it's a neurologist that's done extra training in the ear. So they've done about 13 or 14 years of training.
Wow.
There's only about two in Melbourne that are currently taking patients. So they, as you can imagine, their wait lists are quite long.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I would love for you to share their names actually, if you.
I'm happy to. So their names at the moment. So there's Dr. Luke Chen and okay. Dr. John Waterston.
Okay. I can link in the show notes to them.
Yeah, but their wait lists are quite long at the moment to get in. But you do need a GP referral to get in okay. to see them.
Yeah.
So to claim the Medicare rebate, you do need a GP referral.
Do people need a GP referral to see you?
No, they don't. Okay, they don't need a GP referral to see me. So I'm happy to see people straight mm-hmm. just if they can book in online to see me, so mm-hmm. they can book in straight away.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would recommend as a first port of call to see a vestibular physiotherapist.
Okay.
So we can see you, we can give you a first outlook of what potentially might be going on for you. And then we can, refer you on to a neurotologist if need be, but often as a first basis,
yes,
we can get you started on exercises and things. Yeah.
And that would be great because then, you know, you don't want to book in with someone who's got a huge wait list and I'm sure costly if not needed. So that sounds like a good way to go about it.
Exactly right. Often vestibular physiotherapy might actually resolve the problem before even seeing neurootology. So neurootology might prescribe you medication, whereas the issue might actually be resolved with vestibular physiotherapy. If that makes sense.
It does, yeah. And so with vertigo, can you experience vertigo and it not be a vestibular migraine?
Correct. So there's lots of causes, lots of reasons for you to get vertigo. So the next most common cause is, most common cause would be benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. And that's where you can get little crystals in your ears that get out of place.
Okay.
So it causes short bursts of vertigo when the head is placed in certain positions, such as lying down, rolling over in bed, looking upwards or bending over. This is the most common reason that we see people in clinic, apart from migraines. They're very, very close first and second. In addition to vertigo, people often get dizzy or lightheaded. They often feel nauseous and vomit. They feel quite unsteady on their feet and they usually have difficulty concentrating or a feeling of fogginess or feeling not quite right in the head as well. Yeah, so that's the other one as well. So this is caused by little tiny crystals of calcium carbonate in the ear. They come detached from their normal location and they roll into the semicircular canals in the ear and actually clump and settle. And then when people move, they actually send false signals to the brain, resulting in vertigo when people move into certain positions.
So it would be triggered by a certain position. So people may start to see a pattern of the vertigo or that.
Yes. Yeah,
did you say also feeling a little bit lightheaded as well could happen?
That's it. So, and typically causing vertigo in those certain positions. So looking, lying down, rolling over in bed, looking up and bending over. Vestibular physios can do repositioning maneuvers. And about 80% of the time, BPPV can be effectively treated in one session.
Just getting that help. It's like, wow, you know, that's life-changing if someone's experiencing that, just to be able to treat it properly.
Absolutely. So it's very effective. Vertigo, so BPPV, can be quite effectively treated relatively quickly. And usually people can learn to treat this on their own as well, which is really good as well.
And so when we're talking about migraines, as you mentioned, there are different forms. So I can get ocular migraines. So this, no headache, which is why the first time I had it, I did not think it was a migraine. I thought there was something really wrong. You know, I thought even a stroke because I just didn't understand. I've always, you know, this was years ago, I always thought migraines must mean a splitting headache, but mine is where I see like you've looked into the sun and then that spot stays for about 10 minutes and then it starts to spread like a zigzaggy flushing. And then I just feel very washed out that whole day. And it just, there's no headache, but I just don't feel good at all the whole day after that sort of first 20 minutes. And so what for migraines, if we just talk about migraines as a big umbrella term, what are the most common triggers, the top migraine triggers, so people could be aware of, you know, avoiding certain things?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the top migraine triggers, so emotional triggers are certainly probably number one. So things like stress and anxiety. So this is a big one, whether that be work-related stress, the death of a family member, for example, or anxiety related to your symptoms. So getting stress under control is enormously important in reducing your symptoms. So using techniques such as mindfulness, exercising regularly, seeing a psychologist, helping to reduce your symptoms. There's a good typically getting in to see psychology at the moment is pretty tricky. But there is a good resource on Instagram called Rooted Behavioral Education. That's her handle. She has loads of resources on this also around vestibular disorders in general.
Oh, wow.
She's really good as well. But stress and anxiety is a really big one.
Okay.
Sleep disturbance, so lack of sleep, disturbed sleep, too much sleep can all contribute to the cycle of migraine. So if you suffer from disturbed sleep, things like magnesium can be really helpful. So so magnesium glycinate, for example, before bed can be really helpful.
It's one of my favorite supplements.
Yes.
It just does so much. Yeah.
So that can be really helpful in helping with sleep disturbance. Hormonal fluctuations. So that's huge. So menstrual cycles, pregnancy, perimenopause, menopause. In terms of the treatment for that, hormonal medications themselves haven't been found to be particularly good at controlling migraine.
So someone's getting like a menstrual cycle link to their migraines, for something like going on the pill, for example, could be suggested to them, but you're saying,
it hasn't been found to be particularly helpful so much, but other things like migraine prophylaxis, for example, so migraine medications or things like vestibular rehabilitation, for example, if it's vestibular migraine, are more so helpful at reducing the symptoms. The actual hormonal medications as such are not as helpful in that instance.
That's really interesting.
But the actual the treatment for the symptoms is more so helpful. Environmental triggers, so things like bright lights, loud noises, strong odors, barometric pressure changes, so the fluctuations in the weather. So you can actually monitor barometric pressure changes through apps on your phone.
There you go. I had no idea. My trigger for my ocular migraine, it occurred out of nowhere. I'd never had one before when I was pregnant with my twins. So that must have been hormones.
Absolutely.
Yes. So what would, when we talk about hormones, is it more, if we're looking more so as a menstrual cycle link, is it more commonly seen at a point in the cycle? Like, is it coming up to when you're bleeding? Is it around ovulation? Like, what do you tend to see might be the most common pattern?
So both ovulation and period, so changes in estrogen levels.
So that's the hormone we're talking about.
So fluctuations in estrogen are likely to result in migraines.
So any kind of change.
In terms of the environmental triggers, there are some things that can help. So there's some glasses that you can wear. So if you're sensitive to bright lights, for example, so things like those glasses called Overlux. So that's A-U-V-L-U-X, Overlux glasses, if you're light sensitive. There's also WeatherX earplugs that can help with barometric pressure changes.
So it's through the ears.
So through the ears. So that can help with that.
And what about certain foods? Is there certain foods that people might find a pattern with migraines?
Yeah, so there's definitely dietary triggers. So things like caffeine, alcohol, MSG, for example. Okay. So there's quite good resources. So there's two good resources. So there's both the Heal Your Headache book, mm-hmm. Which is quite a good resource, and also the Dizzy Cook Instagram. Wow. So she has loads of information on her Instagram page about food. So she's got a blog, everything about that. And she has a couple of cookbooks as well, which is about basically a migraine diet.
Oh, wow. Sort of
follow.
Follow well. And see so, if that helps.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Everything as well. So, but just sort of on that note, sometimes the stress of trying to figure out a food trigger can sometimes be counterproductive. Mm. So if you're really sort of wondering, is cheese causing me, or is chocolate a food trigger for me? Sometimes, so with migraines, there can be what's called a prodrome. So leading up to the migraine, you can actually start to crave certain foods, for example.
Ah, wow. Okay.
So, and that can actually be what's called the prodrome of the migraine. So leading up to the migraine. Okay.
For okay. Example. So, it's like a warning, the body's warning of like sign. It's coming. Yeah. Okay.
So during that time, it might actually be the craving, you're actually craving chocolate during that time. It might not be actually the chocolate that's the food trigger. It might actually be the prodrome of the migraine. Does that make
okay,
sense?
Okay, that's it does. Yeah. And that's actually a really interesting, yes, because then like, oh, I ate chocolate, that's to blame, but it was already coming.
Yeah, it was already actually the prodrome of the migraine. Mm, yeah, so
okay.
Sometimes we can get caught up in food triggers thinking that it's the chocolate that's caused the migraine when it's actually mm-hmm. already the migraine that was happening.
That is an interesting – yeah, that's interesting to note. And also, yeah, I hear you with how much stress that would cause someone trying to understand what are my triggers, because there are a few that you've mentioned and feeling stressed of like, oh, I need to control everything and, you know, so – That does sound anxiety-inducing, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yep.
Are there any nutritional deficiencies that have been linked to migraines?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a few. So we can talk about magnesium as number one. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. about 50% of people with migraine have a deficiency in magnesium.
So oh, signs, my God, that's huge.
Yeah, so about 50%. So that's quite massive. Signs of this would be certainly things like headaches, cramps, poor sleep, for example. So often I say to my migraine patients, you know, are you getting cramps? Are you getting poor sleep? And, you know, often they say, oh my God, yes, oh my God.
Yeah, tick, tick, and yeah.
And I say, oh, I think you should try magnesium glycinate. And they come back to me and they say, oh my God, my migraines have completely gone.
Oh, what a life-changing. It's so simple, like magnesium.
Yeah. But in saying that, 50% of people won't have this deficiency.
Yeah.
But two supplements that are really good are either magnesium threonate or magnesium glycinate. So magnesium threonate crosses the blood-brain barrier, so it can be quite effective in treating migraine, but it's a little bit more on the expensive side.
It is.
But magnesium glycinate is better at treating sleep and cramps. But 250 milligrams of each can be quite a nice dosage if you're looking to cut down on costs.
Yes. So combining the two. Yeah.
So combining the two. Or 500 milligrams of glycinate if people are really suffering from those cramps and things as well. You can just go with the glycinate sort of front. Next,
and what an easy intervention to just try. You know, it's not like you're taking a medication. It's just something so simple to just give a go. And if it works, then how good's that?
Spot on. I think it's worth it. I think every migraineur should really give magnesium a
go. I like that word. Yeah.
yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Next would probably be vitamin B2. 400 milligrams of vitamin B2. It's known to be an effective as a migraine preventer.
Ah.
CoQ10 So 300 milligrams. So
yes, I love CoQ10.
Yeah, CoQ10. So it's been shown to help the mitochondria produce energy, and it's shown that really mitochondrial dysfunction has really been shown in migraine as well. And lastly, vitamin D. So that's been suggested that vitamin D really suppresses inflammation, and deficiency mm-hmm. may contribute to headaches as well.
Wow. Yeah. It's not something I actually knew there with vitamin D. I didn't know that. Wow, I've learned a lot there, because it's hard with migraines, especially like just trying to understand the treatment plan. It's like, okay, what's happening? You know, we need to sort you, look at your triggers, supplementation. Can we touch on, we spoke about this before I hit record, giving birth. So I've had a few clients recently where they say to me, I've only experienced this, either it's dizziness, vertigo, or the migraines since birth or since pregnancy. Mm-hmm. You know,
yep.
Could you explain, if we just focus on just giving birth, for example, what might be happening there? Why is that happening?
I think the massive influx of hormones mm-hmm. often sets off the migraine. So I see a lot of women who come into me who have just gone through pregnancy those kind of things that develop vestibular migraine. They may or may not have a history of migraines prior to that, okay. So classic migraines, and then develop vestibular migraine during pregnancy or post-birth. And it's that massive influx of hormones that then triggers that migraine, vestibular migraine to come on. And often what they need is during that period, so there's a few things that you can do.
I would love to know.
Yeah. So there's a few things that you can do. So vestibular rehabilitation is one, because often during that period people generally don't like to be on medication, because often they're breastfeeding those kind of things as well, or they're pregnant. There's a lot medication might be limited, you know, those kind of things as well. So the supplements that I just mentioned are generally usually safe during pregnancy.
Yes.
But also there are neuromodulation devices as well. So neuromodulation devices are devices that stimulate the trigeminal nerve and the vagus nerve. So they're little devices that you attach to either your forehead, along the side of your neck. And they deliver mm-hmm. little electrical signals to that part of either the forehead or the neck. And you do that about 20 to 30 minutes a day, and they're safe during pregnancy. And that can be another option for treating migraine that is safe during pregnancy.
Yes. Okay. Oh, I didn't know about that either. There you go. Because I get migraines when I'm pregnant, but ocular, but then also – and these might not be migraines, but just splitting, like debilitating headaches.
Yeah. So that's an option as well. So so there's three things. So three really things during pregnancy for migraines is really the supplementation, I think.
Yeah.
If it's vestibular, so if there's dizziness, vestibular rehabilitation. If it's not dizziness, if it's just classic migraines, so the debilitating headaches, neuromodulation devices are really an option as
okay.
well.
Okay. So,
yeah.
They're not so much used for vestibular migraines.
Both. So
they can be. Yeah. Okay.
So they're effective for vestibular migraine as well as classic migraine. Yeah.
Wow. And there's so
and
much.
Migraine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There's so much I'm learning about. There's actually a lot that can be done, you know, like in my naturopathy degree, we really did not learn a single thing about this at all. But, you know, what you start to pick up, you're like, oh gosh, I think it's just a neurologist or, you know, medication. But I'm hearing so many really like effective interventions that sound, safe, effective, you know, low cost. This is fantastic.
Yeah, so lots of kind of natural solutions, I suppose, for treating migraine without medication that can be done. There's also, you know, cooling hats that you can wear. There's so there are other options. So what's called a headache hat, so you can put on ice hats, those kind of things that deliver. It's like a wrap around ice hat, sort of those kind of things that you can wear at the time. There's sort of those other natural remedies that you can do during a migraine to deliver pain relief.
Those
sort of things. There's sort of loads of options on my Instagram page that you can check out as well.
Yes, and I'll link that because it is a wealth of knowledge. You know, an Instagram post you did the other day, not the other day, sorry, it was a while back, but I really liked it was the overflowing of the cup. Was that the analogy you used? I really liked that. And that was, you might be able to say it much more eloquently, but explaining the an onset of a migraine or something like that, it can be overflowing of many factors. Can you explain that better than me?
Yeah. So basically, and that's probably linking to talking about triggers. So sometimes when we talk about migraine, sometimes it's not one thing that sets off a migraine. It's accumulation of things over time. So, for example, you might have a really stressful day at work, for example, and that fills up your cup a little bit. Okay, so imagine an empty cup and you have a really stressful day at work and that fills up your cup a little bit. And then your child gets sick at school, and then you have to go and pick them up suddenly from school, and that fills up your cup a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then you have a fight with your partner, and that overflows your cup, and then all of a sudden you tip over into a migraine. Okay. So it's those three stressful events all in one day that trigger you over into a migraine. Or it might have been that also you were on your period, for example, and that has tipped you over into a migraine attack. So it wasn't just one thing or one trigger that it led to the migraine episode. It was a culmination of those events that led to an overflowing of your cup. So what we have to do is try and keep your cup as low as possible so that we don't tip you over into a migraine attack. Does that make sense?
It does. That is so interesting because I think it's easy to assume it's always a one thing and like, you know, okay, what was it this time? Was it that I ate dried cheese or was it my hormone, you know, but it does make a lot of sense that it could be a lot of different things, little mini things adding up.
So it's a culmination of things that tips you over the edge into an attack rather than one specific trigger. And I think if you get too caught up into that, it was that piece of cheese that I ate or it was that piece of chocolate that I ate, you get so linked into dietary triggers and obsessive about it rather than thinking that, oh, it was that culmination of things over time.
And yeah, like zooming out.
Yeah. And going, okay, maybe I need to step back and keep my stress to a minimum, do little things every day, regular exercise, stress reduction, meditation, looking after your diet in general, all those things to manage your symptoms overall. Yeah.
Yes, and it just comes back to cornerstones of good health is what I'm hearing. Exactly. But I mean, reducing stress, that's the cornerstone of so many health concerns. High stress, you know. I just wanted to touch on, you mentioned before a maneuver that can be done, and I think was this in relation to BPPV?
BPPV,
What was the maneuver you spoke about? Like a head thing?
Yeah, so it's called the Epley maneuver. So basically it's a repositioning maneuver that can be done. Basically a vestibular physiotherapist can do it with you to start with. You can be taught how to do it yourself, but basically it's best if a vestibular physiotherapist does it with you for a start.
And that
basically repositions the calcium crystals in your ear if you have benign positional vertigo around the semicircular canals in your ear and back into the main chamber where they belong. Okay.
So it's like pushing them back. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you imagine like a little, you know, there's little ball games that you put the crystals, the crystals back in the right spot.
It's
a little bit like that. So if you put the crystals back in the right spot, once they're back in the right spot, they can't cause you to be dizzy anymore, all right? But BPPV tends to be a recurrent condition, okay? So once you've had it once, it makes you a bit more susceptible to getting it again. So the average rate of recurrence is about every 3 to 5 years, okay?
But that's hugely
variable from person to person. So some people get it a few times a year. Other people, it's once every 10 years. Some people never get it again. Okay.
So often
people learn how to do this themselves. Some people prefer to come in and have it treated. It's different from person to person. But there are three different canals in each ear. The most common is the posterior canal, which is about 80 to 90% of cases. And then there's two other different canals in the ear, and posterior is the most easy to treat. If it's a different variant of canal, that's better if a vestibular physio treats it for you.
Yes.
We see – what we actually see is we look at your eyes to assess where the canal – where the crystals are in your ear.
So we
get what's called nystagmus, so this eye movement, and that actually tells us where in your ear the crystals are. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was going to say, how would you know? Is it just guessing? Or okay. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's how we know where they are in your ear. All right. And that's how we reposition the crystals. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And so at the end of every episode, I ask all my guests this question, these three questions. So, number one, if you could change one thing about our current healthcare system, what would it be?
Sure. So I wish that doctors would more readily refer to healthcare providers for rehabilitation and be less reliant on the pharmaceutical industry. But I feel that has to be an explanation. I want to explain that a little bit. So I absolutely have nothing against pharmaceuticals, and they have certainly helped my medical conditions enormously. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have epilepsy, and I do take pharmaceuticals. But for example, I wish doctors would more readily refer to vestibular physiotherapy, or even, you know, to naturopaths, and be less reliant on, for example, drugs like Semitol. For conditions like benign positional vertigo, which in fact don't respond to pharmaceuticals. Okay, so so BPPV, for example, it requires repositioning to treat. Okay.
Okay, and actually, I remember you saying how successful this can be at treated.
But a lot of say general practitioners will prescribe Semitol to treat. Benign positional vertigo. Okay.
Okay.
So I sort of wish that general practitioners or doctors in general would refer on to vestibular physiotherapy or to healthcare practitioners in general.
Absolutely.
And be more reliant on the pharmaceutical industry. Yeah.
I hear you. That is such a – yes, I'm so passionate about that. And, you know, even if there's one person listening to this podcast today, learning about you and your vestibular physiotherapy clinic and that there are options. There are so many options, in fact, to be helping them with vertigo, dizziness, migraines that aren't there's so much more than just medication. So I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Nothing against medication at all. I think if you need it, absolutely take it. But there are other options as well. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think I'm going to know this answer, but what is your favorite supplement for your particular field and why?
I think you already know the answer, but definitely high-dose magnesium glycinate. So I've had many patients, migraine patients, completely resolve with this supplement. But in keeping in mind that 50% of patients aren't magnesium deficient, 50% of patients won't respond. So it's definitely worth a try. Magnesium would be my favorite. Yeah.
And there's definitely a the the high dose aspect is important because I have a lot of clients that go, oh, you know, I've heard magnesium so good. I went to the chemist and then it's like, oh, how many milligrams in that? And, you know, they're not even hitting 100 milligrams a day of magnesium. And it's like, okay, no wonder we're not really getting the results. So there's that clinical dose that we need to achieve.
And it's also the type as well. Like, so a lot of patients are on a small dose of magnesium citrate and getting diarrhea.
Yes.
Those kind of things as well. So it's also the type and the quantity as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. And the final question, is there a book or podcast that you would recommend to our listeners today and why? And it doesn't have to be health related at all. It can be any topic.
Yep. I'll stick to my field.
Yeah.
But I would recommend, there's a book called Victory Over Vestibular Migraine by Dr. Shin Bae. It's pretty much your one-stop shop for vestibular migraine sufferers starting out on their journey. So I'd highly recommend that book. If you're a vestibular migraine sufferer, I would certainly give that a read.
As a starting point to learning all about it.
Definitely.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'll get that off you and I'll link that into the show notes as well. Great. So, Laura, how can our listeners get in touch with you or work with you?
Great. So you can reach me via my Instagram. So it's @_thevertigoco, or you can email me at laura@thevertigoco.com.au.
Yes, I love your Instagram. It's so knowledgeable. Like, there's just so much, and it's really you put everything in such easy to absorb in, you know, sort of infographics and things like that. So definitely follow Laura.
Thank you
so much today. That was amazing. I've learned a few things as well, and I hope it's helped someone today.
Thank you very much, and lovely to speak to you, and I look forward to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Laura. Have a nice day.
You too. Thank you. Bye.